It's time to tell the neighbors the Charlie Evers Show is on. It's time that you can listen to eras long bygone. So email all your loved ones or call them on your phone and tell them Charlie Evers is on. It may be terminal wrinkles, it may be Hillary's hair, it may be on top of the courthouse, you bet old Charlie's there. You may be invited to dinner, but tell them you can't come. The Charlie Evers is on.
Okay, and it's Friday morning, and good morning to all of you, and welcome to a not so quite as cold day today. The sunshine is really nice, and that's why you should build a house facing south to face the winter sunshine if we have clear days. Today is the day that Ray Seddon will be calling me, and that will be within a couple of minutes from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And so I won't take any phone calls starting right now because we only have one line, and I don't want to tie it up so she can't get through. Ray Seddon is the astronaut. She was here in Marion, and a lot of you had pictures taken with Ray and her husband, Hoot Gibson. And a nice couple, really a very, very nice couple to know. And we'll be talking with Ray about the book she composed, 400 and some pages, and it should be interesting because she was on hand for a lot of major things that happened in the space program. Okay, so she should be calling here shortly. I won't give you my phone number. I've got to keep this line clear, okay? And I've got all kinds of things I can ask her, and I'm sure you could, too, if you were able to get through. But being a female and in the space program as an astronaut, it presents some challenges, and she'll tell us about that. She was on hand when that Challenger blew up, and we'll talk more about that. It's 10:18 right now, so we should be getting a call from her shortly. We had it set up now for 2 weeks that she was going to call at 10:20 on this Friday morning because she was busy. She was traveling. She does a lot of talks to technical groups and so forth. And she is a physician, who has worked as many as 100 hours a week tending to people all shot up and cut up in life. You know, she handled all the emergency cases, and really, 100 hours a week? Yeah, boy. But she was doing that to make some money to live on. Okay, it's 10:19 right now, and boy, I hope everything works out here this morning. This is the 28th, and 10:20 was the time that she's scheduled to call, and that should be within a couple of seconds now. We'll keep our eye on the phone, of course. Okay, and how are you doing out there? It is a cold morning, but not as cold as it has been. Tomorrow it will be getting warmer, and then Sunday will be warmer yet. So that's good. We can enjoy ourselves over the weekend. And let's see, I listened. Did you listen to last night's broadcast from Stewart's Drive-In? I still think having the former Secretary of the Treasury – on the air from a drive-in root beer stand is probably one of a kind. Really, no kidding. Mary Ellen Withrow, of course. Scott and Sean and his friends were there. And so it was quite a night for the opening of Stewart's Drive-In. And it's been there for many, many years. Probably a lot longer than a lot of other restaurants and so forth. But I think most people listening to me right now have been to Stewart's at one time or another. Enjoyed the either a regular glass of root beer or a root beer float, French fries. Oh, yeah, they got all that. Okay. And, I know what I saw on Facebook this morning. A seafood restaurant going in the Harding Center. Now, can anyone, don't call me. But I read where a seafood restaurant is going into the Harding Hotel. And that will be interesting later on today, maybe when I'm on with Scott this afternoon. Maybe we'll talk more about that. I'd never heard of anything like that. A seafood restaurant in Marion in the Harding Center? Yes, that's what the story on Facebook says. But don't call me now. Got to keep these lines open. Let me see here. Make sure I haven't missed anything. All right. Let me see. Make sure that... Okay. Our lines are open. have you checked your battery? When you start your car on these... Oh, here we go. This is her. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Charlie. How are you?
Hey, not bad. How's everything in Murfreesboro?
Well, it snowed this morning.
Oh, well we've had a little bit ourselves. It's been down as low as 10 degrees above.
Well, we haven't gotten that cold, but it's been just horribly rainy here.
Oh, that's why, a lot of flooding down your way.
Yes, sir.
Oh, well, Rowdy.
Hey, can I plug in my headset and make sure it works? And
yeah, sure, yeah.
Talk to you hands-free.
You, yeah. It sounds good to me. And we've had okay. Yeah, are you there?
Are you there, Charlie?
Yeah. Okay.
Okie dokie.
It works fine. But we've had one of the warmest winters in history. They're saying in the last 140 years, we've beat all those past... marks in snowfall and heat and everything else, but it's amazing. Now, Ray, did you ever study, or in outer space, being an astronaut, could you tell any difference looking back at the Earth of anything happening weather-wise?
Well, sure you could. You could see cloud cover. You could see when the trees were green and when the trees were brown.
No kidding.
You could see, like in Central America, when they were burning the fields, you could see the smoke.
Oh, yeah.
You could see some snow cover. So, yeah.
Now,
it was fun to watch.
Yeah, I read yesterday where there is some sea animal, it had to have been a whale, that could be seen from outer space.
Well, I don't doubt it if your binoculars are pretty good.
Yeah, right.
You can see ship wakes.
Is that ship wake?
It's really interesting.
Yeah,
you can sort of see the wakes and then follow it up to the point and just barely see the ship. So
oh, my goodness.
That was always interesting.
Yeah, you could keep your eye on shipping, that's for sure.
Yeah, and of course you could see contrails of airplanes.
That's right. And there's another thing that has bugged me to death. The radicals that say those are chemical trails. And they say the government's trying to poison all of us. Oh, jeez.
Conspiracy theorists, yes.
Yeah.
Those are condensation trails.
That's right. That's air, water-laden air that shows up.
Right, exactly.
There's a lot of conspiracies out there. Well, like the one that said we never went to the moon.
Oh, that was the big one.
Yeah.
Oh, I talked to people who walked on the moon, and they assured me that they were really there.
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, you know, and as Hoot says, if we said we went to the moon and we didn't, surely the Russians would have caught us on that.
Oh, wouldn't they? They'd have ballyhooed
that. Oh, man. They'd have been all over the place.
Yes.
They said, here's the supposed landing site, and there's nobody there.
Yeah, right. Is there much of a chance that we're going to be back there within 10 years or so?
Yes, I think so.
Wow.
You know, the Space Launch System is getting ready, and it has a bigger booster, I believe, than the Saturn V.
No
kidding.
So to
get people to the moon. And I think we're looking at the moon as kind of a way station on the way to Mars.
Okay.
To learn
yes.
how to live in a habitat and mine what's there. And,
yeah.
And I think they're going to have a moon orbiter first, and so
okay.
it would sort of be a space station above the moon where
right.
people would go down and for short periods of time. So it's going to be really interesting. But we're so excited that they'll soon be launching Americans and I guess folks from other countries from Cape Canaveral, the Kennedy Space Center. They're all getting ready for that. So it's going to be an exciting
Boy,
time. The next
Boy, would
few
you
years.
Like to be with them?
You know, I'd probably go if I got invited, but
yeah.
I'm not sure that they would invite me.
Well, I was wondering, well, not because of your height, though.
No, not because of my height.
You know, how tall are you?
I'm 5'2".
Okay.
And, of course, the requirements when I applied was that you had to be at least 5 foot tall. So, you know, I made it by a couple of inches, but
yeah.
I certainly was at that time the littlest astronaut, as I say.
Oh, yeah.
And NASA got a few surprises. They simply thought, well, you know, a smaller person would just make a few things smaller. But, you know, I had to adjust, and they had to adjust, and that all worked. And, of course, later, Mary Cleave was selected, and she was just 5 feet tall.
No kidding.
But,
okay.
You know, that worked. I think the only problem that we had is that we were really too small for the suits that you wear for spacewalk.
Okay, but still, I think brains over matter would be the important thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, you were a physician, or you are a physician, and you spent numerous hours in emergency work of all, and was that discouraging or enlightening when you had to work?
I guess, you know, my emergency room work, certainly, it was difficult, especially during my training when I was working at a large trauma hospital. So it was pretty exciting much of the time, and you saw all kinds of strange things and you know, really difficult injuries from car accidents and shootings and knifings and things like that.
Oh, yes.
At this charity hospital. But, you know, I learned a great deal, and, you know, I trained in surgery, so I got to do operative procedures. And, of course, I did the first surgery in space. Did you know that?
Oh, you did? I didn't know that.
All my patients died. It was on rats.
Oh, yes. The rat doo-doo floating through the air.
Yeah, well, you know, by the time I flew on those missions, they had sort of fixed that problem.
Yeah, okay.
But it was interesting.
Yeah. We're going to break here for about a minute or so, and we'll be right back with you.
All right.
So if you hear a voice come in, it's the break.
All right, I'll be
and
standing
then
by,
we'll,
Charlie.
We'll break again at 10:45, and
okay.
I'm on Fridays until noon. If you know, we could be as long as you'd like.
Well, I may be a little bit shorter than that, but
okay.
We'll do whatever we need to do.
You just let me know. Yeah.
Okay.
And I finished your book. It took me a week.
Oh, well, that's not bad.
No. And boy, 400 and some pages.
Yeah.
And I really noticed right away when you said the manuscript people, once they read it, said, oh, we got to change this. We got to add some oomph to it.
Mm-hmm.
And some color, and you can tell what they did.
Yes.
I wrote,
I'm not a writer by training.
Well, I wasn't either. I wrote a newspaper column for 10 years. And
so you're a writer.
Thanks for the editor of getting my English straight. And adding a little bit of this and that in the way of adjectives.
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Sure. It's 10:30 right now, so in the background I'm apt to hear our break at any time, but
okay.
We'll see.
Right.
Okay, yep. Now, Ray, I was... how is Paul and Dan and Julie?
Scott, did you know that Comet used to fly over Marion every night?
No, Charlie, I didn't know that. How's that possible?
Well, it wasn't really Halley's Comet. It was Martha Dowse's fire baton coming from Girard Avenue.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Opiates has taken everything and everyone I've ever loved away from me. Everything.
I blew my ankle out and I got prescribed pain pills by my doctor.
If making my detox public is going to help somebody, I'm all for it. I just wish I would have had a warning.
Opioid dependence can happen after just 5 days. Know the truth, spread the truth. A message from Truth, the Ad Council, and ONDCP.
Okay, we're back once again with Ray Sutton. And Ray, the other day I was looking through all the pictures, and I got pictures of you and Hoot with all my grandkids, and I really appreciate
that. Oh,
wonderful. Yeah, and a lot of people from Marion had their picture taken with you, too. And wonderful. So I hope they're listening today.
Wonderful. I get to at least to be in touch with them again. It was such a wonderful crowd at Wings and Wheels.
That's right. Oh, and off the subject a little bit, Murfreesboro, Tennessee, that was featured. What big thing in the Civil War was Murfreesboro involved in?
Oh, it was the Battle of Stones River.
Okay.
Was fought here, and we have a battlefield where people can come and hear about the history of the Civil War battle that was fought right here.
Now, did we lose that battle up north here?
Well, no, I think you Northerners won that battle.
Oh, okay.
It was kind of a turning point, I think, in the war, but it was well fought by both sides.
Well, it really is interesting. You know, we have Civil War groups around here,
mm-hmm.
and something. Well, getting back to outer space, I took a couple of notes here. Oh, and the one, I hate to almost ask it because we've heard more about pilots of all kinds spotting strange things in the sky. Has that ever come up with you? Strange things being UFOs.
No, it hasn't. But, you know, people are really anxious to see something like that. In fact, on one of Hoot's flights, there was a picture looking out his window, I guess, and there was something out there. And, everybody said, oh, there's an alien flying in formation with them and all this kind of stuff, and it ended up being, you know, part of a tile that had come off or something.
Sure.
we knew what it was. Yeah. And I think that sometimes people see things or pilots see things that they really aren't unidentified. It's just that there are some sort
that
of
they don't know
that we're not supposed to know about.
Yeah. But I remember back when those tiles were first placed on the shuttle that
mm-hmm.
I thought they were made here in Ohio. I'm not sure 100%, but those tiles, that was a big engineering problem with those tiles to get them to stick on where they needed to stick.
Yes.
Boy.
True. And, you know, if you've ever seen one and held it, it feels like a piece of styrofoam.
Is that right?
So they were somewhat delicate. In fact, I don't know if you know, Charlie, but on my website, www.raysedden.com, I write a little blog, and my next blog is going to be about a flight that had some tile damage.
Oh,
but
okay.
You may remember when they first put those on and then flew Columbia across the country, a lot of the tiles came off. So
yes.
There was an awful lot of work that had to be done, but there were many, many tiles on the bottom of the space shuttle, and they certainly were an engineering feat, and
Wow.
But it took us a while to get used to putting them on and making sure they stayed on.
I can imagine. Now, I've read in your book, did you actually turn the space shuttle backwards into the in coming back to Earth to to avoid the the tile problem?
No, we turned around. Actually, we did sort of a backflip. But
okay.
Then if you burn the engines that way, it slows you down.
All right.
And that's why, you know, that's how you deorbited. You fell back into the atmosphere because you went slower.
Okay, now, there must have been a lot of resistance then to the heat.
Or of course, of course.
Yeah, well, those engines blasted you off anyhow, or part of the way. So, yes, they were used to heat.
Well, you know, it was really the heat of re-entry. When the shuttle would come back into the atmosphere, it would hit the air molecules.
Uh-huh.
And it heated up the bottom, so you had to sort of make sure you were bottom forward, or bottom at least into the wind. You know, it felt like you were flying through a blowtorch during that period of time. There was a lot of, looked like fire outside the cabin. Of course, we didn't feel any of that because we were well protected.
Yeah. You know, an interesting thing, too, that I think I remember from a long, long time ago, there was a Marian native that flew, whether they fly to along or near the shuttle when it's re-entering or after.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
During the first flights, they had chase planes flying
Yeah, chase,
nearby.
That's it. And mm-hmm. He was from Marian.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be at all surprised.
Yeah. I tell you, I love aviation. I never had the means to really study it, get my license, but I have flown anything you can name, including from flying girders with just wings.
Oh, my goodness.
With a sign on the pilot's seat that said, "Pilots, choose tobacco." Oh my! But
well, you need to write a book, Charlie.
Yeah,
book.
I could. Oh my land! And hot air balloons. One time we went up in a hot air balloon, and we were coasting over a farmhouse, and I looked down, and there were people having a picnic, and I said, "Hey, how are you doing down there?"
Hello.
I thought they'd die. They looked so
well. I'm sure they were surprised, but delighted.
Yeah, and it's so quiet up there.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what we hear. Who did I want to go out to the big balloon festival in Albuquerque sometime?
Yeah. Oh,
they have lots of balloons, and they're beautiful.
Yeah, and it's such a tremendous feeling to be floating through like that, and just looking at, well, of course, you've seen the atmosphere from, mm-hmm. or the land from the atmosphere, or from... Mm-hmm. Outer space, wow. But it's so good, yeah. Now, I want let's see, we talked about your female role and how you were able to overcome that in great shape. And that poor rat, though, weren't there animal rights groups that were on your...
Yes, they were, Charlie. We sort of had to deal with that. But.
Yeah, now, otherwise... You could go out and you could shoot and kill every rat you saw, but boy, don't take them on a space shuttle.
Right. Don't use government money to do it.
What kind of an operation did you do on that rat?
Actually, we did dissections. We brought back some tissue samples.
Oh, okay.
You know, it was very interesting. Many of the things that were being done on humans were done on the rats, but of course, humans didn't really want tissues taken out of their body, but... you know, we were able to do that on the rats, and it taught us a great, great, great deal. So,
Yeah.
I was proud to be a part of that. It was it was the first time anything like that had been done. So we brought back an awful lot of samples that gave us a lot of insights into how living creatures adapt to weightlessness.
Ah, yes, and that's the big thing, adapting to weightlessness. There are so many problems involved in that have to be overcome.
Well, you know, and that's what I felt like was my role when I came to NASA and what I wanted to study. And, you know, with my medical background, my life sciences background, I was delighted that two of my three missions, a 10-day and a 14-day space lab missions, were dedicated to looking at humans and living things adapting, because we needed to know what was going on so that people could stay healthy for much longer periods of time, like for a year on the space station. So we began the work to define how to keep humans healthy in space.
Right. Now, all the work that you did on the space shuttle and other, and what, the Skylab too? Of course, that wasn't Skylab. Was were there people on that?
Well, that was Skylab back in the 70s, and yes, they stayed up for. There were three missions, and I think the longest was 84 days. So that was quite impressive. But they didn't. They couldn't take an awful lot of other equipment up with them.
Yeah, so, there wasn't that much space, was there? It was like a.
Well, there was lots of space, but the weight, I think, was a problem.
Oh, okay.
But they certainly set the groundwork to tell us what sorts of things we needed to look at.
And one thing I remember, the robotic arm that lifted up out of the top of the space lab to do various jobs.
Right, right.
Boy.
The remote manipulator system, the RMS, the arm, it didn't come out of the top of the space lab. It came out of the side of the shuttle, but it was certainly a very capable piece of equipment that, you know, I was able to use on my first shuttle flight to try to turn the satellite on. But later on, we retrieved satellites.
Oh, that satellite. Yes, that story. That is so interesting. Tell our listeners, what it wasn't exactly a sewing kit you brought, was it, on board?
No. We didn't have a sewing kit, but what happened was we launched the satellite and it didn't work.
Yes.
And it was floating somewhere nearby, and the ground felt like we could probably do something to turn it on, because it was obviously not turned on
yes.
the way it was supposed to. And so they devised a way for us to put an instrument on the end of the robot arm to go and try to snag a switch on the side that might turn it on. But we had to get instructions from the ground how to put this thing together, and it kind of looked like a fly swatter.
Oh, yeah.
But we had to, there was some, a big needle and some very heavy thread that was in our, one of our kits that was supposed to be used if we needed to repair one of the suits worn for spacewalks.
Oh, sure,
we had
yeah.
to pull that out, and I had to stitch this fly swatter thing together. It was a very interesting story. Was that the Capcom, the person who talks to the shuttle crews from Mission Control, said that's a really nice what did he say?
Fly swatter?
No.
But
anyway,
Charlie
Ride was there, and he said something, and she said she's a really a good. He said she's a really. I think Mission Control said you're a really good seamstress, and Sally said something like she's a real good surgeon. But you know, it was just kind of like she was standing
sure.
up for me in Mission Control.
Oh,
but,
wow.
But,
you
know,
but
you it was
got,
interesting.
You got it turned on, though, did you?
We did not.
We
tugged on the switch several times, and it was in the on position, so that was not the problem.
Oh, so it wasn't your problem.
A crew went up later and retrieved it and hot-wired around the internal electronics and sent it on its way.
And how many seconds did you have to wait until it actually energized itself once the switch was on?
It was going to turn itself on pretty quickly, and then it had a two-minute timer inside, and it had a booster rocket at two-minute point. The booster would ignite to put it in the higher orbit. So we had to be very careful that, you know, we got away from it if we turned it on.
Yeah.
We're
going to pause for a minute or so once again on our break here. Then we'll be right back. It's an interesting story of your involvement in the space program. And I just wonder, well, I'll tell you more about it later, how many astronauts are trying to get out of, to get all ready and prepared for the next round. We'll be right back. Well, Ray, I thought we had a break there. Normally we do, but we don't, so let's continue. You there?
I'm here.
Okay, all right. Now, another thing that I noted. Scott, do you remember when Hillary Clinton came to Marion in 2016?
Yes, I do. I stood outside of the Harding Hotel in the rain waiting to get an interview that didn't happen.
You know why she chose the Harding Hotel to meet?
No, I don't.
Well, they used to have a hair salon in the lobby, and she could sure use it.
Here we go again. WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Two, one. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
Okay, Ray, we're back once again. I was wondering, as we were talking, does outer space or the lack of weightlessness have anything to do with hydraulics, or do you use any hydraulics in the operation of the space shuttle or anything else?
Well, there was a hydraulic system that did some things on the shuttle. We had some power to hydraulic systems that drove the main engine, I believe, and the some of the air surfaces to fly with.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, we had. They were very important to flying the shuttle.
Yeah, apparently weightlessness doesn't have much to do with hydraulics, or
no, they work quite well.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, now at one point in your book, you mentioned the fact that Hoot had a special mission, a secret mission. Has that resolved itself into public information now or not?
Yes, they had a very secret military mission shortly after we started flying after the Challenger accident.
Yes.
They couldn't, it was very secret. I mean, I couldn't even know the exact launch date. They just said, we'll be packed and ready, and
wow,
we'll take the spouses and children down there when it's time. And so it was all kind of, I didn't know what was going on. And so anyway, they launched, and, you know, it was interesting. I'll tell you an interesting story. We went out in our yard in Houston to look up to see if we could see the shuttle fly over.
Yes.
And we looked up, and it said, you know, there's not just one little light, there's two little lights going over. And, you know, our escort, another astronaut, said, but as it turned out, they deployed a satellite. And so, indeed, we were seeing the satellite and the shuttle.
Yeah.
It was not known that they even deployed a satellite until years later, and it was declassified that they had sent up or they had taken up a military satellite. So, yes, it was interesting, but he could not really speak about it for years.
Isn't that something?
Until it was declassified.
Yeah. Wow. So, yeah, it's really an interesting thing. It's so complicated, the whole space program. And now the president he's formed a space, what does he call it?
Space Command.
Yeah.
It was always, you know, it was there, but it was part of the Air Force.
Okay.
And I think to really set it apart and give it its due, they said, we're going to pull that out of the Air Force and have a separate space command. So that's a good thing. So they have their own budget, and you know, they could speak for, you know, themselves rather than having to go through the Air Force.
Now, there was one of the astronauts, I think, that you went. Did you ever go up with Sally Ride?
I did not. Sally Ride, of course, was the first of the six women that all came in 1978. She was the first to fly. and did so very successfully. I think there was a lot of pressure on her to make sure that she did well.
I bet. And now, later on, she became head of the Center of Science and Industry in Columbus. And I don't know how long she...
No, I think that was Kathy Sullivan.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, all right. So,
but Kathy was a wonderful person. She did the first U.S. Spacewalk for a woman.
No kidding. Oh.
And she has a book out called Fingerprints on Hubble. She did a lot of the engineering, helped with a lot of the engineering and operational part of deploying the Hubble Space Telescope from a space shuttle.
So isn't that Hubble?
She's quite a lady.
The pictures that the Hubble comes up with, you can access on the internet. Just out of this world, you might say.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh, yeah. Now, do they have a new telescope?
Yes, I think they do. I don't keep up with that, but they're always devising things to look at the universe in different ways.
Sure.
And so I think there's a new one going up sometime soon. But, Hubble was certainly revolutionary. So all the people that worked on that, a lot of the astronauts went when it was repaired and refurbished, went up and worked on it, replaced parts and things like that. So it prolonged the lifetime for a very long time because it did have replaceable parts.
Yeah, just amazing what has been accomplished in space, like in making repairs and updates and on things that in outer space. Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, I'd hate to get around to it, but the Challenger, people still talk about that. And
mm-hmm.
To tell you the truth, I never knew until I read your book that they had found the astronauts that crashed. I mean,
mm-hmm.
in the Challenger.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard that in the news. Now,
everyone sort of assumed that there was a great explosion and everything exploded.
That's right, yeah.
There were some pictures that had been taken that clearly showed that the cabin part of the shuttle had broken free and fallen into the ocean. It was heartrending to think of the things that had happened, but certainly, bringing back the Challenger astronauts so that they could be buried was great closure to their families.
Were they buried in Arlington National Cemetery?
There were a couple of them at Arlington and then different places. Ellison Onizuka was from Hawaii, and he's buried in a wonderful sort of a volcanic bowl a burial place out there. And I think Judy Resnick, had her ashes sprinkled somewhere. And I don't remember the others, but it's all in my book. It was a very sad time.
Oh, yeah. How did you ever get over? Of course, you're being professionals, all of you. Yes, you did feel it, that's for sure. But yet, you were able to set it aside to further the program.
Well, Charlie, at that time, I talked to a psychologist about that time, and he said, most of the astronauts are workaholics. And so we all had work to do.
Yes.
So we had to do certain things. And it kept us busy, and it kept us focused, and it helped, get the shuttle ready to go again. And so I think that, to a certain extent, is how we got through it. I think a lot of the astronaut spouses, I think they had a hard time. Because
a lot of them had to
decide whether they wanted... to pressure their husbands to not stay within the program.
Right. Yes. Well,
so,
you went through the Hoot. How many flights did he have altogether?
Hoot made 5 flights altogether.
Yeah. Wow. So you had to gather your children and watch each one of those take off?
Absolutely.
Oh, boy.
And it was both wonderful and scary. And, of course, I had to pretend that it wasn't scary because my kids were counting on me, but they have some wonderful memories and
how about
some wonderful pictures.
Little Paul. Now, little Paul's not little anymore, is he?
No. Little Paul is, gosh.
How old?
37. Dan is 30.
Right?
You know, the if you look on the back of my book, you'll see one of the little boys standing out in a flight suit at
yes.
the end of the runway
right. yeah.
at Edwards with me coming home in the shuttle.
Uh-huh.
And that's that my younger son, Dan. And it was a wonderful picture that my husband snapped at just the right moment. So
wow.
We're lucky yeah. that we have a lot of nice pictures that,
so,
you know, you can see in the book.
And Hoot's daughter, Julie, would be the oldest of all the kids in your family.
Yes.
How old would she be now?
She is now, I think, 43.
Oh, my land, yeah.
But she's in Washington, D.C., has her family up there, and is a wonderfully accomplished, bright, and beautiful young woman. So, yeah, we have fun going up to Washington
oh,
and just
that's
seeing
super.
Her.
Yeah. Now, how about Hoot? Does he have any yearning to get back into the program, or at least, like you, maybe, supply technology that's needed?
Well, probably not. I think we have both moved on from the space program. It was a wonderful time to be involved. It was a very busy time. We obviously had a bunch of flights together. But he has, he's now working as an expert witness for airplane accidents.
Oh, that's right.
So
yes.
He's in the legal field now, and it's a very challenging sort of thing to help figure out why airplanes crashed and you know, having legal cases come up about it. So he's very much involved in that. But, of course, he still builds radio control model airplanes.
Oh,
and
yeah,
so
I saw one take off, yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Boy, that's... And Paul, Hoot seems to be a perfectionist, too. I mean, he is all technology.
Absolutely.
And he's human, too.
Yes. But, you know, in airplane crashes, frequently you have to understand the engineering that went into building the airplane a certain way
yes.
and how it could fail. So Hoot enjoys applying his engineering background to an assessment of things like that. So he's still very much involved in aviation. He's no longer racing at the Reno Air Races, though, which I'm very glad
yeah.
of.
Hey, you know, you're talking in your book about flying in the T-38. That sounds like really interesting. And that plane can exceed the sound barrier?
It can.
Wow.
Just barely, but... you know, that's one of the first things that I got to see when I was learning to fly in the T-38 was, you know, how in a dive, you know, you can feel the plane shudder.
Yes.
And then, you know, you see that you're going a little bit more than Mach 1, a little more than the speed of sound, which was pretty exciting. But, of course, we knew that we were going to go 24 times the speed of sound in the space shuttle.
Well, once you get past the speed of sound, are there any other surprises that come up, or is it just smooth sailing?
It's pretty smooth sailing after that.
Okay.
It's something about, I think, the shock wave as you...
You leave behind you, yeah.
Yeah.
And what... they say there's two of those bursts that people can hear on the ground. Is that right?
Well, for the space shuttle, yes. When the space shuttle would fly overhead to come in for a landing, there would be a sonic boom off the nose and then one off the tail. So, you know, you could be watching for it to come in for a landing, and it would cross the runway and turn and come in, but it would go boom, boom. And, of course, no one really knew that until the first shuttle flight, and it landed over California, and everybody's going, what was that?
Yeah.
But it's pretty exciting when somebody you know is on the space shuttle and you hear the two sonic booms and you know that they're getting close to being home.
Yeah, Ray, we're going to break here. Now, we can carry on in another, let's see, we break for about 20 minutes coming up at 11 o'clock. Are you able to stick around or call back?
I'm afraid not, Charlie.
Okay.
Well, I've got something else scheduled, but
okay.
It has been a pleasure to talk to you, and of course, always has been a pleasure to come there. And, of course, you know that my blog, I sent you a copy of my blog about the crawler.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, oh, the crawler, yes, indeed. Well, great. Thank you so much. You can call me anytime you like. Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. Yeah.
I appreciate that. It's always wonderful to talk to you.
Thanks a lot.
WCH Radio, 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place. For Jim Lavelle, the man handcuffed to Lee Harvey Oswald when he was assassinated.
So when you're coming out the door with Lee Harvey Oswald handcuffed to you, you're there to protect him. Take me through that walk. What do you see? How did it happen?
All right, well, as I walked through the door, I could see, I've always made it a habit in my career, especially as a detective, if I went into a room where there's more than one people around,